And now you're listening to the Christmas edition of the Fans of Wrestling show on the FOW Radio Network. Of course, as always, I am here, Patrick, with Danny Danger and the Screen Queen Tamika.
Santa Claus is in attendance, and don't worry, we will hit him with a Stone Cold Stunner before this edition is over.
And we're only days removed from MLA 14, MLA Worldwide's 14th show that was a very interesting show thanks to some airport issues, which ended up making it a very long show.
Yes.
For having five great matches that kept the crowd entertained, what were some of your highlights? You know, of course, the three of us were there live in Norcross, Georgia for MLA 14.
As you said, it was five matches, but all five matches were very, very good. All five matches were very entertaining in their own right. I think that was an important thing too, is that, you know, each match kind of stood out individually. And part of that was maybe the pacing of the show, because the show had to be stretched out to a lot for travel issues, so that some of the stars in the main event could actually be at the event. But I think each match had a good pacing, had kind of its own feel, and you had some extra added segments and all this. I mean, of course, the quite a good bit of chaos throughout the show. Multiple times people had to be separated by officials, people running in from inside and outside. I mean, despite the show, from the time it was supposed to start to when the show actually ended being almost 5 hours, the crowd still managed to stay very, very active during the matches. So I think that goes to say for a lot of the working parts, you know, the venue for kind of keeping music going and the food and these kind of things to keep people's energy up and keep people there and waiting and just excited every single time that wrestlers would hit the ring, the crowd would wake up right again. Just so many things. I mean, of course, one of the big things was for us, you know, people that we know and followed for a long time, seeing the debuts of Trip Cassidy and Sugar Dunkerton was really, really awesome. Both men did really well, were very received by the crowd. And so Sugar, you know, unveiling a new persona that he was bringing for the MLA show. This is the first time that I got to see in person the kind of new persona that Trip Cassidy's been doing for a while. It's been some time since he's been in Georgia. I kind of got to see the two new personas of people that I really enjoy. So that was definitely a lot of fun. As both men always work hard to put on a good performance. Countless of things throughout, but that's the first thing that stuck out to me, just because it's always kind of good to see and people I like and really appreciate their work getting to do different things in different settings, getting to see, you know, new crowds kind of experience these people for the first time, is always kind of something really cool to me. Just kind of reminds me of when you first see like a wrestler that you really, really like, you know, you get, there's this kind of, wow, like they're doing all these things. And so to kind of, it's like being a parent at Christmas, I guess, you know, you see your kids get to experience Santa Claus and the presents and the joys of the holiday season. Whereas you remember that when you were a kid, but now you're getting to sit back and watch somebody else experience that. And that sometimes is almost as cool as when you experienced it yourself. So that was, to me, like I said, that was one of the big things that stood out. Just the debuts.
For sure. I totally agree. Watching Sugar and Trip Cassidy go at it in the ring, Sugar bringing that whole new dance persona with his Shake It for Shuggie, Maracas in full blossom. See and watch the crowd kind of get behind him and Shake It for Shuggie. I thoroughly enjoyed the Joey Lynch Anthony Henry match that the crowd was on fire for. Joey Lynch has been at MLA now, it seems, and the crowd has taken to him and they loved him. They were cheering for him. Anthony Henry, of course, you know, we know him as the five-star king. The MLA crowd knows him as probably a bad word I probably can't say, but their match was really good. they took it to the outside. They battled back and forth. It was really, really good. It gave more energy to the crowd who, while they enjoyed Sugar and Tripp's match, here they had a vested interest in Joey Lynch, which was great to see, as we all know Joey Lynch and we've watched him all over, to see that crowd again. His continual acceptance into that genre, and also just his continuing just moving into this king of the moonsault, into this awesome singles run just everywhere that he goes, showing that he is absolutely a tag team specialist, but he is also a complete and total singles wrestler. Right. That was great. The other match that I really, I don't know if, well, that was really great, but the other match I enjoyed dealt with tacos. So, you know, I don't have to get into that. Me versus the tacos. I think we all won.
To me, I definitely enjoyed the things you guys mentioned. I also thought the main event killed it, especially after La Familia de Tijuana came out to a huge pop.
Yeah, the place went nuts because nobody thought those guys were going to be there. I mean, right. Bestia came in from the crowd. He pushed right past us, knocked some kid over on his butt trying to get to the ring. And everybody's like, oh, crap, he's here. And then they're like, well, did the other guys make it too? The other guys make it too? And when they finally, when the music hit and they finally came running down, yeah, that the place went bananas. And at that point, the crowd had been there, you know, at least 4 hours.
Five. Remember, doors opened at 3:30 p.m.
Yeah, that's true. So some of them had been there even longer than that, maybe, you know. And they still just, the wrestlers were able to bring that much energy out of the crowd, even after what, almost a marathon day at that point.
So, with that, that was, main event was really memorable. I think it definitely delivered. Was advertised at the end. And then the impromptu three-way match for the Global Championship. Supposed to be 1-on-1, Horrors versus Daga. But, of course, due to the card being subject to change, Austin Theory was added there. And I thought that was a great show. And to me, that was my favorite match of the night.
Yeah, Rey Horace is always one of my favorite luchadors right now to see live. Just because he's, you know, I mean, he's, although he's been wrestling for quite some time, he's still like the star on the rise. He still goes out there and treats every performance like, you know, like he still has something to prove. And so that, to me, that makes him that much, that's, you know, so much more exciting that he still has that passion and energy. Single time he goes into that ring, he's looking to make an impression on everybody watching.
And then lastly, Alex Cruz was finally able to put an end to his feud with Serpentico in a violent dot color match. And of course, Serpentico had to be stretchered out on a chair by security due to the violence between those two. But after months of trying to get his own vengeance against the man who you know, stabbed him in the back many months ago, finally got his revenge.
Yeah, but that, like you said, had to be carried out. We get devastating maneuvers in that. I think the finish came with the Death Valley driver off the top onto a trash can. And once Serpentico went through that trash can, he wasn't moving much. Yeah.
That was, That was amazing. The match itself was, again, it was a dog collar match. Those are brutal. You use that chain to your advantage and your opponent's disadvantage. After the show, that trash can, I went and I like had to inspect that trash can. I have never seen a piece of metal so twisted and broken and just bent beyond all recognition of what its original shape was. The impact of that was crazy. The results of that, I know there are collectors out there who said, oh my gosh, you take the trash can home. I want to know parts of that bad juju, because that was a man's body who, you know, impacted that and just basically made that steel into just this twisted mangled thing. I can just imagine waking up today being Serpentico going, I must be dead because I feel like it from this intense amount of pain. So it was awesome. It was violent, but it was wonderful.
So that was MLA 14, Lucha, Beer, and Tacos. As we said last week, the best combination. And we can't wait for 2018 and for the next MLA show. You know, I'm sure they're going to deliver like they always do. And I'm really excited for it. Now, something else I'm a little excited about is a recent development with Ring of Honor. Over a year ago, I was astonished that Ring of Honor had the audacity to come out and have a six-man championship instead of a Women of Honor championship. I was so upset about it that I gave myself a self-imposed ban from watching Ring of Honor.
Patrick was boycotting Ring of Honor programming due to what he felt was a snub for the Women of Honor division. As the Women of Honor had been building up a lot of steam, and then they decided to randomly add a trios championship when the women who'd worked so hard still had nothing to fight for.
I can say that officially, as of 10 p.m. sometime on Sunday, or 9 p.m. sometime on Sunday, I can't remember. It was sometime when I saw it on the Twitter. It was announced at Final Battle, according to the Twitter, that the Women of Honor will be crowning its inaugural Women of Honor champion in 2018. So my ban will now be over. It is over, effective immediately. And starting this Wednesday or Thursday, I will be once again watching Ring of Honor.
Okay, so they showed the belt. It was the segment they had. It was very, very dark for whatever reason. You couldn't see the belt that well, but they posted pictures later. But they also announced a 16-woman tournament to crown the first ever Women of Honor champion. Based on what you know, I mean, yet again, neither of us really have been watching Ring of Honor. You know, we've kind of been following what we hear from other people on the Twitchers. Who do you think, we don't have to say who you think will be the first champion. Who do you think makes, say, the final four or the finals of this tournament? Who do you think, will be some of the women who will be very, very close to being the first champion?
If I had to choose four women right now, without a doubt, Brandi Rhodes, Kelly Klein, Mandy Leon, and likely Deonna Purrazzo.
So you think that's pretty much the final four?
In my head right now, yes.
I'm pretty much right there with you. Just, I mean, if we're going final four, yeah, that's, I mean, with as much as they've been doing with all of those women, I mean, Mandy is essentially there, the woman who they kind of building the division around, you know, is she's a student of theirs, and then Kelly Klein as well, and Deonna's been ripping people's arms off for well over 6 months at least. And then Brandi Rhodes, she's getting better and better, and they've been doing more to spotlight her. And
she's Brandi Rhodes.
And she's Brandi Rhodes, and she'll be featured on a reality show soon, so they want that kind of, you know, extra kind of help and buzz they can.
Yes. Are you saying that they're only going to use Brandi and her popularity and put her in this, you know, perhaps in this tournament and maybe into the final four just because of her name? For shame.
I'm not saying that's the only reason, but I'm saying those are helpful reasons. She has been working very hard several months to working on her in-ring skill, working here in Atlanta, you know, at the One Fall Power Factory, and many other places, trying to improve her wrestling ability. So she has come a long way since, you know, when they first brought her in and threw her in the ring and kind of fed her to Kelly Klein. But so I think that that's the thing too. I think is that fans who've been watching have also seen her progress as well. And so I don't think that it's, some fans are going to go, oh, well, am I, you know, yeah, it's just because, you know, who she's married to, whatever. I think that got her foot in the door, but she also realizes she has to work just as hard as everybody else. And I think she's been doing that. And I think the fans who are really paying attention, see how far she's come with her along the journey. I think that's a good part of it too. So I think, you know, she's poor, but she's been working hard to pry that door open, and burst through it.
Nice analogies. I like your final four. I pulled Deonna out and I put Karen Q in. Karen Q has been making statements in Ring of Honor. She's definitely one that's been on the rise and on their radar. They've had her in a feud with Kelly Klein. I believe she is the first person who actually pinned Kelly Klein. So I think that her star is a little bit more, even though Perrazzo's just excellent. Just there's no, you can't take anything away from Deonna, but Karen Q, I believe that they will give her a little more shine as that tournament progresses. And perhaps she would pull the foursome that we're anticipating in for that Women Honor Inaugural Championship. Some people say too little, too late. I think it's good that your silent protest is no longer silently protesting, because all the craziness aside, they do still have some darn good wrestling. The women's matches, of course, are great. That's what we're talking about. But they still have a decent product, and it's a shame that it's taken them this long to jump on the proverbial train that everybody else is as far as women's wrestling is concerned. For now, if they're going to try to get out there, I hope that they do something even more spectacular to try to establish themselves as, yes, we're late, but look what we bring to the party outside of just a championship belt.
Well, I mean, the early days, you know, it was Ring of, because of Dave Prezak's relationship with Ring of Honor, and, you know, he was calling the action there for the owner of Shimmer. Had some early Women of Honor matches, I guess, trying to gate before Shimmer really started to see, you know, how people would react to these in different markets, I guess. And so they, Ring of Honor always kept very, very little women's action because they're like, well, we'll do this and Shimmer will do this. And there are literal and figurative sister promotion to, you know, where women who were managers, you know, such as Lacey and Allison Danger, were managers in Ring of Honor and would maybe compete periodically. They were some of the top stars in Shimmer. And so I think that is why Ring of Honor, quote unquote, took so long to do anything women's wrestling wise, because of that Shimmer relationship. They were just intent to let Shimmer be the top women's promotion. And so it's only the last couple of years they've started incorporating more and more and more, as, you know, they have their training facility. And they had taken some of the women, you know, on were doing matches on the road. But it at the same time, it is it does seem like it's been a long time coming for this Women of Honor Championship. And so I think that's also one of the things that is going to make this the tournament, however they do it, especially when you start getting down to less and less participants. I think it's going to make it that much more exciting because these women realize that there's more, that people are saying, oh man, it's been so long and such, and you know, it's about time. So I think these women realize that because it's felt like a long time coming, there's going to be more eyes on them. I think they're going to be scrutinized a little heavier. So I think they're really going to go out there and lay it down, you know, to work hard to show that this is justified and to help prove and affirm to the fans who are saying you should have given these women a belt a long time ago. So they have something to fight for, you know, like everybody else does. I mean, heck, you can win it. You can two different singles championships, a trios and a tag championship already. Whereas the women have just kind of been over bragging rights, basically. So I think the women are really going to lay it down, and they're going to go out there, and they're going to put on some fantastic matches. But I think they realize like now is the time to crank it up, to turn up the heat. And you know, they already have some rivalries and stuff built that we could see play out even more so in this tournament.
Oh, definitely. And the other thing that I think is, I think if I had to choose somebody to win right now, I like to see Kelly Klein be the winner.
The gatekeeper finally officially take her place atop the division.
That's the way I would go.
Then it becomes the chase of who can be the one to finally, you know, stop Kelly Klein, have her kind of be the monster destroyer that she's been for, goodness gracious, almost 2 years at this point. Yeah, so I think that's a good choice. I do, because sometimes you get the chase is much more exciting than the babyface victory. Although I do think a lot of people, it's this choice between, well, is it going to be Brandy? Or, you know, it's going to be Mandy Leone because she's their homegrown girl. I think Kelly is a good choice to do it first, and then have, you know, maybe you have Mandy be the one to overthrow her, and then Mandy Leone gets over even more the belt, and then, you know, a couple weeks later somebody beats her for it.
Kelly's the number one choice, totally and completely. If they don't put it on Kelly, and I mean, as we get more into this tournament, we'll see how the cards fall, but I think Kelly, her whole persona was built for this moment. So it is definitely time for her to take that crown and add the title, the gold, to the bracket that she already does.
Now, moving on to some other Ring of Honor news, as again, didn't watch it, but I went by the Twitter machine. Dalton Castle defeats Cody Rhodes, the blonde assassin of the Bullet Club. For the ROH Championship, Dalton Castle gets the belt that I feel he should have gotten back at Supercard of Honor when he was, you know, insanely hot in ROH. I mean, I don't think that he's not now, but I definitely think that there was a lot more of the machine behind him earlier this year. But the Peacock wins it. And he now is the ROH World Champion. Your thoughts on the title change? And are you guys surprised at all that Cody Rhodes dropped the championship a couple of weeks before Wrestle Kingdom, where he is to face Kota Ibushi?
I'm surprised at Cody's hair color choice. But I'm not surprised at Dalton Castle picking up the win here. Dalton Castle is one of the last remaining ROH homegrown talents that's still currently employed on their roster. No offense to Cody, but again, he is a product of the WWE. Dalton has been there for years, putting in the work, doing everything it takes. He's taking this over-the-top, flamboyant character that has two valets that he uses as step stools and chairs, and just his whole persona on paper. If you've not watched it, you go, who is this Joker and why would they do such a thing? But if you've watched the evolution and the creativity of Dalton Castle, you go, why does this man not have a title in this company just because of the work that he has done over the years? He is a wrestler. Let's not make any mistake about that. Character aside, he is a great wrestler. His in-ring work is pretty crisp, to be quite honest. And his over-the-top personality and his persona has helped to get the boys over. This twin show, these guys, they're what, $150 together is their combined weight. They're able to go out and wrestle on national TV, to take bookings throughout the country, wherever they want to go to take bookings at, and to perform for crowds where generally any place they would go outside of this, if they were not the boys, they would be enhancement talent. They would just be, you know, two guys who are going to get their butts crushed and beat. So it's past time that Dalton's got his due. I have my Peacock fan here. And I'm happy for that man. Cody didn't need the title. He never needed that title. It was just a pretty decoration, much like his wife at this point.
Ooh. Dang. I thought you were a Brandy supporter. Now you're just shooting on that poor girl.
I'm shooting on her because when they were here, those little friends in front of us that we were at ROH when they were recording the reality show, I just couldn't take her little buddies in the front row, so.
Oh, okay. So it's not hatred towards her directly.
It's hatred for her people.
Now, Tamika, you're wondering why Cody decided to go with the look he had at Final Battle? It's simple. If he couldn't look like a Rhodes by the talent in the ring, he might as well look like a Rhodes by the color of his hair.
Now who's shooting? My God. I know, gosh. I was going
to say, are you trying to tell me that Goldust is more talented in the ring than Cody? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I mean, that is a fact. Since day one, I have said Cody Rhodes is the third best wrestler in the Rhodes family.
I think you've also said that Brandy was ahead in the rankings as well. So that's saying a whole hell of a lot.
Once Brandy started wrestling, I said that now Cody was not the worst, the least of the Rhodes, family members in wrestling.
Regardless of how talented you think or may not think that Brandi Rhodes is in the ring, if she wrestles in the outfit that she wore to ringside for Cody's match, she instantly becomes a lot of people's favorite wrestler, I think.
Hashtag truth. White cat suits for us all.
I don't think I want to see Patrick in a white cat suit. I don't think the yellow man would like a white cat suit. I think he'd want a yellow cat suit, which would still be horrifying, but at least it would be in his color.
This is very true. You know, if you're going to put me in something that you're going to regret seeing me in later, at least make it yellow.
The visuals I will have now will keep me awake.
You started this. You said for all, okay? There are three of us here. That is all.
Yeah. Now, unless you have something against Hispanic people, Tamika, then that's a whole other issue and a whole different type of podcast.
What? Hold on. What the? How'd that come from? White cats and sprawl? Oh, never mind. Jesus. I'm done.
Is it Gringos Locos or something?
No.
What, do you have something against Gringos too, Tamika?
I love everybody and I hate them all equally.
She is a gringo. What are you talking about?
If anybody ever
tells you otherwise, they are a dirty liar.
As we talked about off the record, Tamika is whatever she needs to be for whatever she needs
to be. In order to get free drinks and free tacos and stuff, yeah.
It's all about the food, y'all. Okay. I'm like a chameleon when it comes to food and drinks. I am part gringo. I am part Hispanic. I am part Native American. I am part African American. I am part whatever. Does not matter. Hey, and I speak a couple different languages. So, you know, I just know curse words, but that's not the point. I will say those words to make you think that I am that just so I can get food and drink. Okay. Moving on.
Also at Final Battle, someone had their final battle as Bubba Ray Dudley, Bully Ray, or whatever he wants to call himself these days, was in a tag match with Tommy Dreamer,
who he called his best friend. I don't know how Devon feels about that, but he said that he got to have his last match with his very best friend. I think Devon somewhere was shedding a lot of tears.
That's his brother, you know.
Why is his brother not his best friend?
Contractual obligations.
Look, Devon Dudley may have tears, but at least he has a lot of green dollars that the WWE gives him, so he can clean those tears away.
Yeah, he's not crying like Jimmy Jacobs. Devon was fine. He wasn't trying to take selfies. He was good.
So Bubba Ray Dudley is done. He has retired. Do you guys think that he's truly retired, or we're going to see him show up at House of Hardcore?
Hell no. He'll be at House of Hardcore next week. No, but come on. It's professional wrestling. Nobody really retires. Okay. We've known people who've retired. Oh, I'm doing a retirement tour, et cetera, and a couple months later, they're back. Okay? Wrestling a full-time schedule. I believe a friend of Mika's said he was retiring for 3 weeks, and then he'd be coming back to wrestle. Terry Funk's been on his retirement tour for 25 years plus. You know, it's especially when you've been doing it so long, like you're like, okay, I'm done wrestling. Well, what the hell am I going to do with my life? I've spent my life on the road. I've spent my life in front of the fans. Like, this is what I love. This is what I've devoted my life to. Not only, like, I don't know what to do with myself, but I've done this for so long. I miss it. I need it. You know, like, I need life. So I don't think that anybody ever really, quote unquote, retires. He's kind of been working a very light schedule. You know, since he left TNA the last time, and then they had their short run in WWE, the veteran run, like they did with the Outlaws, you know, we'll give you the belts one more time, you know, let people know you're the greatest of all time until we say somebody else is. So yeah, he may take some time off, but yeah, he's going to pop up here and there. You know, he just wanted to make, you know, have his quote unquote final and make it say that it's his final, but it's never your last. It's never you never have your last match till you're dead in the ground. Okay. That's pretty much it.
Bubba's going to be wrestling a full-time schedule with his hot young girlfriend. That's what's going to happen. And eventually they're going to go and pick up here and there. He'll be back. I give it 6 months.
Yeah, didn't she just recently retire as well?
Yeah, quietly.
Madison Rayne retired, and then she came back, you know, and is back at TNA and stuff after she retired quite some time ago.
Yeah, so
it's you never really stay retired, yeah. Your partner is wrestling again. And be like, oh, I gotta go, you know, because that way while I'm there, I might as well pick up some bookings. Somebody like Bubba Ray, you hear he's gonna be coming with Velvet, and you go, well, shit, I'll pay this guy a bit extra and have him come in the ring.
Tamika, how long do you give him if he is not done before he wrestles again?
We'll see him at the end part of June 2018.
unless WWE calls him again, say in February, to have him do one more WrestleMania or something. Right. We're gonna put you. We're gonna do the TLC. We're gonna do the TLC match. Woo! We're bringing back TLC. Dudley's and Hardy's.
And
one
Christian
more time.
Commentary.
Yeah, there you go. Special guest referees.
I think that this might lead into an induction to the Hall of Fame.
For the Dudleys?
Yeah.
You think this year?
Why not? They're not coming back ever again at this point. I don't think that WWE has any plans of ever bringing them back in a roster position.
I don't think is PC enough. He's still loose cannon. He's young loose cannon. He's not an older... Okay, this is, y'all can shoot on this. He's not an older, washed up wrestler. He's still out there taking bumps. So he's still very active and open on Twitter and the social medias where he will run his mouth and give his opinion. When you get those Hall of Fame nods, you get that nice little Legends contract and what have you. They're not ready to offer him that just based on the strength of his character and his mouth alone. I have to wait till Bubba's, you know, maybe walking with a cane or something before the Dudley boys get the Hall of Fame nod.
Maybe part of this whole retirement was so he wasn't working for any other promotion, so he could be cleared to work, to do the Hall of Fame. You know, maybe they really didn't want him to be involved with a major promotion. Anything could happen in the World Wrestling Federation. All right, so speaking of the World Wrestling Federation, many things are happening in that universe as well. And first and foremost, Dolph Ziggler wins the United States Championship. I talked about this in the review podcast earlier this week, but what do you guys think about this? Ziggler, your new U.S. champion.
I mean, I guess you got to give him a belt every once in a while just to kind of keep him somewhat relevant, right? I mean, he floats back and forth between these secondary titles. I don't know how long he'll hold it for. You know, he may lose it within a few weeks, but it seems they throw the U.S. title at him, you know, and then, okay, well, then we're going to throw the Intercontinental title at you one more time. You know, he's going to be like by the time he retires, he's going to be like a 25-time champion of each of those two belts, but he'll never be the world champion again. I think that's the thing. They're like, oh, because he kind of still gets over, and, you know, we like him to go out there and bust his butt to make other guys look good.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to make it look like it means something when people beat him, you have to let him win every once in a while. That's what they do. They let Dolph Ziggler win every once in a while, and usually it's for the secondary championship. It's just the way things roll, man. When you just show off, when you're out there trying to steal the show, every once in a while you steal the title belt.
Wow. I said this before. I like Dolph. So this is his reward for doing the whole bad gimmick imitation deal where people hate Dolph, but Dolph at least has some kind of personality, whether it be irritating, annoying, you like it, you love it, you hate it. Dolph has been around for a while and he gets work in the WWE and the system and the fans and what have you. Corbin is not fan friendly. He's not really, it doesn't seem like he's wrestler friendly. It seems like that whole lone wolf persona is something that is not such a far stretch from the truth of him. It's, you need personality. You need some sort of appeal. You need people to care enough to dislike you. And right now, I think that the WWE recognizes that people don't care enough to dislike him. They just dislike him because he is him. Dolph can work with anybody. Meaning that, yes, he's going to sell and bump like crazy in this program with Corbin, but it's going to give another dimension to Corbin now, because hopefully the chase for that U.S. title is different than how he chased for it from AJ. So We'll see if he has any character progression or any depth there. But Dolph is a good transitional champion, and it's going to help perhaps have more people come into the spotlight to try to come after this title. Again, Dolph can work with anybody. He can make Zach champion. He can do where the hell. He could bump for Renee Young and have her looking like the best wrestler ever. That's a skill and a gift that he has. And putting the title on him is, I'm pretty sure they're going to utilize the hell out of it.
I hope that this is a short-lived title reign. And I hope, again, like I continue to say, that he is wished good luck in his future endeavors with Bad Comedy.
So mean. Wow.
The opposite of the Bad Ziggler is the return of the top guys. The Revival are back.
It's about time. I mean, like, it's been so long. I mean, thankfully they're both healthy and well, but it seems like it's been so long since they first started to debut and started to pick up steam, and then they had to take time off. Very happy to see them back.
Top guys doing top guy things. The rumors of Sheamus's health and the Cesaro curse, it's good to see these big brawling, brawny types back on Raw, people who have established themselves in NXT, who are definitely have shown so far in their seemingly brief time that they have the tools to get over on the big shows. So having them back gives a whole new, fresh outlook to the tag team division, which still, I like the Shield, I like the Bar, but seeing them fight in a different incarnation 350 times, can I get some variety, some spice? That'll be great.
You got it. More teams in, you know, and then hopefully, before 2018 goes too far, hopefully Jeff Hardy's well again. You know, we bring, you know, the Hardy Boys back in.
Broken Hardys.
Yeah, Broken Hardys. You know, you get the Broken Hardys revival. You know, maybe you shake up some other things in the tag division as well. But yeah, definitely happy to see them added in. Like you said, add some new life into the tag division, so we're not seeing the same two matches over and over and over again.
And lastly, with the WWE, it is official at the Royal Rumble in Philadelphia, January 28th, 2018, for the Universal Championship, Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman versus Kane.
Goodness gracious, you want to talk about a match that's going to put you to sleep? Holy crap. Man. I saw that and I was like, really? That's the direction you guys are going? I mean, Braun is much. I mean, is, you know, as we've seen, Brock Lesnar's apparently not in the shape that he once was, you know, with some of his last couple performances. And I love Kane and all, but he doesn't need to be at the top, you know, unless he's taking the pinfalls to put the, you know, unless he takes the loss so that Braun wins the championship or something. Like, that's the only way that needs to go. Yeah, just little to no interest in seeing, you know, the biggest showdown. You know, they're gonna say this is, you know, because these guys are all huge. Oh, it's, you know, the biggest showdown, blah, 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 you know, 1,000 pounds in the ring, like those kind of things. They're going to start throwing all those crap at us again. Yeah, it's all about the big spectacle with these humongous guys, but it's not going to be a fun match. I mean, I hope that the Royal Rumble matchup is enough in itself. To sell that, you know, to get people to watch that show, you know, that's the big thing. And
You know, I mean, so we of course know Brock Lesnar's not going to be in the match. He's, you know, he doesn't have that kind of stamina anymore. But Braun or Kane could potentially make appearances in the Royal Rumble. You know, it's so. But yeah, that just that main event. Just I was just going, oh, seriously, wow, you guys are doing it, and it's going to be terrible.
They just want to use the strength of Braun to try to get that the Universal title has not been defended or seen in oh so many days or months or whatever. I know we just toted Brock Lesnar out Monday. I forgot again that he was a champion, that this belt was real. I thought it was like a fucking unicorn. So
the figment of your imagination.
Right, and I didn't know I had such a good imagination. And imagine a whole title belt being held by somebody who's 270-odd pounds, and you know, just he's the greatest hide and seek player of all time. Because nobody's seeking him; he's hiding. Nobody's seeking. But yeah. It's that is a horrible main event. That's a Raw main event. That's a house show main event. That is not for the Rumble. So. Hopefully the Rumble outshines this main event. It has to. Gosh, help us all. It has to.
Well, like Danny alluded to, it's happening in the Royal Rumble, the Royal Rumble match. That's the real main event, the featured match of the night. So putting Brock in a three-way with the two other beasts, you know, also probably may take Braun away from the actual Royal Rumble match, which is probably the match that he would be the most favored to win due to him being the monster, and likewise with Kane. So you take those guys out of the equation, you kind of open the field for more other guys to possibly win it.
Possibilities, that's true, yeah. Before we moved away from the Fed, there was one more thing I wanted to kind of mention that I noticed. I saw two announcements over the weekend of WWE contracted talents being advertised at independent wrestling events. Now, we know that William Regal has been at Evolve. You know, he has not appeared on the live broadcast, but he's been there doing seminars for fan appearances. One of the announcements was that Oney Lorcan would be at Beyond Wrestling. They specified on the poster that he was there for the live crowd only to sign autographs and such. To me, that in itself is interesting. But the more interesting part is that I also saw Apollo Crews being advertised as competing in a tournament for ICW in the UK. So he's not just going there to make an appearance and sign autographs or run a seminar. He will actually be competing in a tournament. To me, which is a lot bigger thing. What do you guys think this means for relationships with WWE and the independents? I mean, we've seen some things but back and forth, but to me, the biggest is advertising Apollo to compete versus he's just going to be here to make an appearance.
I think that, you know, with PCW and the WWE, they sort of have a relationship with each other. They said, I believe, Noam Dar there before. Now, also, there's history with Cruz. Cruz used to be a member of the PCW roster as well.
Yeah. Okay. That's why they're using him, because I think they believe their crowd would turn out to see him again. But I mean, the biggest thing to me is allowing their guys to compete at other events, you know?
I think that, like, with the UK guys, is a lot of what they do is they control their booking. So it's kind of like they're able to be used by different companies as long as they adhere to the WWE's direction. I think more than anything, this is a favor, you know, for Apollo and for, you know, the company. You know, you remember back in the day after Pillman's passing, Les Thatcher in his promotion in the Midwest, I believe, used to do those memorial shows for the Pillman family, and WWE would allow some of their talent to go work those shows, you know, for the Pillman's benefit. So,
well, then yeah, but to me, that's also a different time, though. That's also a different time and era, and that's also for a different reason, too.
It hasn't been seen done a lot in the last few decades, and that's maybe something that, you know, WWE is realizing. They can make exceptions. I think that this may be something that really meant a lot to Cruz, and he probably pitched it and asked for it, and I'm sure that PCW will need to adhere to the same directs from WWE, and I believe I saw in their tweet that they had thanked Triple H and WWE, so you know they've talked to him, you know, William Regal. So, and that's the other thing, you know, everybody in the UK knows Regal. So, I mean, also, I think this is a thing where Regal also had to, you know, vouch for the company, know the company. There's somewhat of a relationship to where they could make it work, a favor. And who knows, you may see some PCW young boys help out the next time that they go by the UK.
Exactly.
Raise security to take a couple punches from whomever.
Yeah, WWE is not scared. You mentioned good working relationships, Regals, you know, knowing Apollo's being on different rosters. The point of the matter is WWE has killed the American territories, and now they're taking it worldwide. They've already started with the European Classic, with grabbing some of these women who were in the Mae Young Classic from European promotions and bringing them over here, European and Asian promotions, and just kind of on a global scale. It is in everybody's best interest to work well with Big Brother. So you can go to Big Brother and say, hey, I've got an idea. On the line, we can do some more business. It's a great business move. It doesn't cost them anything. All it does is add more eyes to their product because, again, remember wrestling fans, some of us, you know, some people don't get that Apollo Crews was, you know, Yeehaw Nation and go, oh, that's the same person. Yeah, it is. So, you know, again, it's just going to draw eyes back to the WWE product. It's going to do wonders for that promotion because you've got this name coming that will help sell tickets. But again, on the back end, if you have somebody in the back burner that WWE has eyes on and they go, hey, listen, remember when we let Apollo come and play in your sandbox? Now we want XYZ. You can either give them to us voluntarily or we can just wave an insane amount of money at them and they'll take it. Choice is yours. I don't think WWE's not being a star, but they're just laying the groundwork in case they need to bully people into submission.
In order to be a star, you need to be a star.
WWE is the sky. They create the stars. That's how they feel.
There you go.
I can speak for them.
Wow.
That took a hard edge, didn't it?
American territories, they are the sky. They created the stars. Goodness.
WWE is Skynet, okay? Have you people not
Oh no. Is Roman like the is he like Arnold Schwarzenegger? He's like the first Terminator, or is he like
T-1000? He's T-1000.
And Triple H is the Terminator killer.
Exactly.
They can't be Skynet if he's the one killing the Terminators and bringing their skulls and going and raising them up over his head at WrestleMania for no real reason.
Okay, so we just rewrite that part, but yeah, pretty much.
And speaking of Terminators, I know I did say I was done, and then Danny wanted to bring up that one more subject, and another subject came to my mind real quick, and that is that Hideo Itami made his debut on the main roster this past Monday, as he was in a tag team match with Finn Balor against the Mistourage. Now, Hideo has been advertised as part of the 205 Live roster, and this must be the first time that a member of the 205 Live roster has been in a wrestling match against the main roster heavyweights.
Well, yeah, he's been advertised for 205 Live, but maybe that doesn't mean that he's exclusive, or maybe they decided to change those plans. But here's the big thing. So, even though a lot of times what happens in NXT does not directly reflect what happens on the main roster, they just formed a cyclical story. Okay? Hideo Itami debuted at first in NXT. Kept getting attacked and double-teamed by the Ascension. Okay? The man who he brought as his friend to help him settle the score against the Ascension was Finn Balor. He brought in Finn Balor to come and help him take on these two guys that are attacking him. So, all the, you know, now we come to several years later, now being attacked by two men who he cannot shake. Okay? Who comes running down and makes his debut, saving his friend, but Hideo Itami finally paying back that debt and replaying the favor. Itami and Balor go in there and kick the crap out of those guys, and Itami hits the GTS on Monday Night Raw for the first time in many, many years, and utilized, and conveniently, next week, Monday Night Raw will be in Chicago. So let's see how that plays. Let's see how the, what kind of reaction it gets if and when he hits the GTS in Chicago. If people, you know, fill the ring with trash, or their heads explode with excitement.
Of course, my city is a wrestling city. I think they'll get excited to see the maneuver. I think that WWE kind of shooting their shot, Itami out a whole day in advance before 205 Live, where he was advertised. I will give them credit for kind of going back history, because Cole remember which one of history between Finn Balor and Hideo Itami, that, you know, they were friends, and that he read, that was kind of how the ring on Monday, as, you know, running in to rescue Finn Balor. I think it also brings people's curiosity about 205 Live up, especially after we just had WWE Week, where 205 Live was on. Wait, I'm sorry. No, that was NXT. Never mind. But I think it brings curiosity because you have now a star in Finn Balor, a certified WWE superstar, was friends with this guy from 205 Live who does the GTS. Oh my gosh, let's watch this show. There's a whole lot of stuff happening that we might need to know about.
Like Drew Gulak.
Maybe. Drew Gulak. Like Enzo Amore. Exactly. This intermingling of the smaller statured gentlemen, where Enzo, again, much as people hate him, he's a microphone fiend, meaning he will grab the microphone and he'll talk until everyone is blue in the face. And Balor brings a whole different credibility. He brings that actual wrestling credibility, that superstar persona, that mystique, that it factor, where if now Finn shows up on 205 Live, you're going to have more eyes on that product, which is what the WWE is aiming for, of course, for the success of that show.
It could be that very much so. I wouldn't put it past, you know, WWE has been known to be petty. I'm sure no one's surprised. But we will see. But Hideo Itami looked good in his debut. He looks healthy. Of course, after he came back from his latest injury, he did the NXT loop, and he looked to be in good health. No other injury. So let's hope, knock on wood, that he can continue on the health run and have a much deserved good run in the WWE It's been a long time coming. He's one of the wrestlers that I've been the most excited about to see on the main roster for a while. Of course, the aforementioned injuries have held him back, but now that's behind him, and glad to see that he is now being able to be seen by the masses and put people to sleep in the way. Not the fans, but fellow wrestlers. And with that, it's time to wrap up the show. But before that, it is Christmas season. We're only a few days before Christmas or whatever other holiday people like to celebrate or not celebrate, you know. More power to you, to each their own. But I believe the three of us celebrate some form of the Christmas holiday. What do you guys have planned this upcoming weekend?
I will be indulging my history nerd self as Mrs. Danger and I will be heading to Virginia and exploring and living the living history of America as we see Colonial Williamsburg, historic Jamestown, and the Battle of Yorktown Victory Center. So that is what I will be doing at least a few days leading up prior to Christmas. You know, and then, you know, whatever, stuff with family or something. And then show of the year 4, which is like wrestling Santa's gift to all of us.
That's a pretty stacked up holiday week you got going there. I feel a little underachieving. I've got holiday parties to attend with some, you know, mature people, and holiday parties to attend with some immature people. So I'm going to probably, you know, do a couple holiday parties here and there, kind of low key it, show my face in a place and disappear, because sometimes those things get out of hand, and
Because that's what Loki does. He comes in and he kicks some people in the head and then he disappears.
Assassin's Creed style. That's pretty much my mantra. The hitman. I'm gearing up for end of the year, because there's, of course, show of the year on the 27th, and then we're rolling into 2018. Lots of wrestling on the horizon. I'm just not sure where I'm going to wind up, because there's a lot of shows closing out this year and rolling into the next one. So we'll see.
What kind of crazy shenanigans does the Yellow Man have for the holiday?
Well, I have my brother and his wife and 6 children are coming to Georgia, so the whole family is gonna be together for first Christmas. All my siblings and my parents and all the grandchildren.
Wow! So you're gonna have like 30 or 35 people. You're gonna have like 30 or 35 people at one Christmas celebration.
So it's gonna be great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna be doing a lot of eating, drinking, and being merry, like I do the best. So it'll be fun. And then, of course, as you mentioned, show of the year 4 on the 27th. And then I'll be taking a vacation after that. I can't wait. The holidays are upon us, which means time off work. And it's time to play the game. What game? To stuff ourselves as much. And then to begin the new year saying that we're going to lose weight and actually not do it, so that we can stuff our faces even more on the next holiday.
I thought you meant like the SNES.
I was like, are you getting like a PlayStation or 2K18 or something? Was that what that was leading to? No, apparently the game is eating a lot. Hungry, hungry hippos.
I'm down with that game too.
So with that, we want to wish everyone a happy holidays. Enjoy them. We'll be back sometime next week for a... we'll try to make that happen. If not, Happy New Year's as well. But with that said, Check us out on FOW Radio Network on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. Check us out on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F. In Danger. Tamika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.